Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. Starting off today with Chris Temple, founder and editor of The National Investor. Chris, first thing we're going to do here is look ahead to some of the central bank news that we will get this week. We have the ECB meeting, and we do have some Fed minutes that will be released in the middle of the week. Just to kick us off, do you think anything that comes out of these two events for central banks is going to be market moving, going to surprise the markets in any sense?
Probably not, Corey. The European Central Bank, as we've talked about for a while, they've taken pretty much any idea off the table of moving away from their accommodative policy. They have no choice but to stay with that, and sooner rather than later, they will probably enhance it, as the Bank of Japan has recently done, as the Bank of the People's Bank of China has been doing, and as the Fed has signaled it will soon start to do again by the end of this year. In fact, the Fed will be adding net treasuries back to its balance sheet. So as far as the Fed minutes are concerned, probably not. I'm going to be curious to see if, beyond what all of us know already, and that is that the Fed is going to sit on its hands for quite a while, even if we get a trade deal, even if the stock market manages to get back to or above its old highs, they're going to take a long time to get back to a place where they, if we had a perfect world, where they would even think about discussing tightening policy again. That's still a low probability, in my book at least. The thing that I'll be most interested to see, if there's any discussion of it in the minutes, is the dollar, because the dollar could still be a fly in the ointment that'll screw up a few of these rallies that we're watching right now.
Chris, what about that balance sheet unwind that's going to end here sooner rather than later from the Fed? Do you see any importance as to where the balance sheet will be when the Fed does end that unwind, or anything else that you're watching?
Well, see, that whole thing, and a lot of people have said this, Corey, nobody cared until the end of last year that the Fed was unwinding its balance sheet. It was like an afterthought. They were starting to watch the Fed interest rate policy, but all at once the market decided to care about this. And I think that, as I said at the time, as we were getting into the latter part of last year, that the unwind of the balance sheet and the interest rate policy was starting to cause some liquidity worries in global capital markets, and that's the one thing the Fed can't tolerate. But I really think that everybody just talked themselves into this ultimate size of the balance sheet being a bigger issue than it necessarily should have been. I mean, it's one thing if you're arguing about starting at a $4 trillion plus balance sheet and the Fed is determined to unwind it down to nothing. Well, yeah, then you got to worry about what that's going to do to the markets as far as drying up money. But when you're quibbling over whether it's going to end at 3 or 3.3 or 3.5 trillion, I mean, I don't understand how that is something everybody got so worked up over. But the point is that they did. And the further, more important point is that when the markets worked themselves up into this, the Fed dutifully followed along, whether it had to, you know, do it with its teeth gritted or not.
Now, what about the, I think, lack of any sort of significant moves or impact on the Treasury market and long-term yields especially? Did that surprise you that there wasn't a huge move in that sense, or what? Where did you stand?
Well, look, there's still a lot of liquidity in the marketplace. You've had all kinds of prognosticators that were saying that we were going to get massive upside move in interest rates. The same thing is being repeated with, you know, in February, the federal government set a record for the monthly deficit. It hasn't really mattered much because there's so much liquidity out there. It's got to go someplace. And in relative terms, the U.S., even the U.S. debt structure, and more so the ability to service debt, especially when we have what the late Charles de Gaulle, France's president, once called the exorbitant privilege of having the world's reserve currency, you know, there's almost nothing that the Fed can't paper over, and the markets won't allow them to further paper over. So, no, I never thought we were going to get a major move higher in long-term interest rates from what the Fed did as far as quantitative easing. And, of course, way back when, I thought that to get a bigger move, the Fed should have sold off more treasuries from its balance sheet and raised short-term interest rates less so that the combination of those would have stood a better chance of steepening the yield curve and allowing some business expansion to continue forward. Instead, they did the opposite, screwed it up as they often have done, gave us a flat and for a little while here and parts of it, an inverted yield curve. And now they've got to try and undo that damage before it's too late.
All right, let's move on to another market that has been moving up nicely ever since it seems like almost everything bottomed on Christmas Day. That is oil. Oil up again today, over $64 a barrel. This has been a pretty steady grind higher, but then just last week and now even starting with today, oil is starting to further break out, almost solidifying some of those recent moves higher. What do you think about that overall energy sector and still the fact that it really seems like the energy stocks are lagging this move in oil?
Well, I've been surprised by how much oil has rallied. You know, a lot of the base metals, for example, that are also economically sensitive have been kind of tentative, although because, and this is the interesting parallel to oil in some respects, with some of the base metals, we started to see accelerating rallies recently because of individual shortages, depending on which one you were talking to. There's going to be some supply problems. And a lot of people are sniffing that out in the oil market as well. And I think appropriately so. The question is, you know, do we get a rollover of the markets if growth expectations become subdued? Will that take the beneficial impact of the better supply picture away from oil? Or could we see, you know, the U.S. Price for oil get up to where Brent is right now, which is north of 70? You know, it remains to be seen. I think one of the things that pleasantly surprised the bulls, at least in crude oil, is that OPEC and some of their allies led by Saudi Arabia have been far more resolute in shoring up the price. Whether the orange wonder in the White House here likes it or not, he's been carping about them pushing oil back up. Last time he was able to jawbone the market down, this time his jawboning of the market lasted for about half a day there several days ago. So we'll see what happens. You know, we're going into the seasonally strong time of year here in the U.S. especially, to some extent up your way, where you've got higher demand for gasoline. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that there is still an opportunity with oil stocks, which this time around yet again have lagged the performance of oil. Some have started to catch up, some groups haven't. And as people look at that, and as I look at those opportunities, you know, I've liked the MLPs when they were at their low, were a no-brainer. You know, we've got a few of those on our list, but, and I may add one or two others which have been laggards and now are kind of the next tier of stocks that may start to catch up. I'd be worried beyond that, though, because one of the interesting things, even here in the U.S., though we have raced in the recent past to record production, now we're well over 12 million barrels a day of oil production, there's been less drilling activity. Rig counts have been dropping rather than going up. And further, there's word that especially in the Permian quarry, you're seeing wells that are lasting even a less amount of time than they were before. So it's going to be interesting to see if, especially here in the U.S., we kind of borrowed so much from the future as far as going nuts. We're throwing all kinds of cheap financing at the shale patch. Didn't matter hardly if a company was cash flow positive, let alone making any money. The Wall Street and the banks were funneling hundreds of billions of dollars into this sector, goosed all of this production. We got a nicer export market now, but at what point is this going to be like the proverbial Wile E. Coyote going off the cliff and his Acme rocket booster runs out? That's where I think longer term, and I don't think we're there yet, but longer term, I think that's where a lot of people are going to get shocked with the global oil market, because you have a situation in overseas in many places where a lot of companies are catching up with a lot of investment that they didn't spend in the last several years. So between here and developing more reserves, there's potential supply disruptions. Here, it's a very different problem that may have the same outcome, that we pumped so much that we just can't keep this pace up. And so down the road, recession or not, you could see oil prices continue to go higher because of supply problems. So it's really an intriguing market to watch right now. I'm glad I've been, had some energy stocks on my list. I got spooked out of a few of them last year, made money on more of them than not. But, and I'm looking at this again to ask myself what areas or what individual companies still have got a lot of catching up to do, even if oil itself tops out. That remains to be seen. The flip side, of course, is that all of the shale production, natural gas, which I thought was going to start to show some more bullish longer-term fundamentals by this time, has gone the other way. I mean, well, there was one statistic this morning I read, Corey, that, again, looking just at the Permian Basin, enough natural gas is just burned off that they don't even bother trying to capture because they're going after the oil to power 7 million natural gas automobiles.
Jesus, that is a pretty crazy stat right there. Yeah, wow. I had no idea that it was anywhere near that. One thing to also consider for the oil sector, especially if you're invested in Canadian companies, is that upcoming election in Alberta on April 16th. I had a discussion with Joseph Schatzer over on the weekend show, and that should be listened to for people also considering at least Canadian investments. Chris, let's also talk about the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. dollar pulling back a little bit today, but still above 97 on the dollar index. I know, still a lot of people out there that want to be bearish U.S. dollar, but I find that a hard argument to make right now when you consider what's going on around the world, and even when you just look at that U.S. dollar chart. What are your thoughts on that dollar?
Well, most people, Corey, who are bearish on the dollar are bearish because they're trying to scare people into buying gold or into buying some phantom dollar refuge or something like that. All the usual suspects telling you that the world is dumping dollars. And I've said exactly the opposite, that the risk is if you're going to have a major move anytime soon, it is going to be that the dollar index breaks that 97.5 or so level and keeps going higher. The Fed does not want that. The Fed twice in a row now at their FOMC meeting has been way more dovish than the markets expected. And for that, where the dollar is concerned, it accomplished absolutely nothing for the Fed. So, and this is with Powell specifically talking about it a couple of times. You know, he'll tell you, well, that's the Treasury's job, not ours. And that's horse hockey, like Colonel Potter used to say on MASH. You bet your rear end that they look at the dollar. You bet your rear end that they don't want it breaking higher, because that's going to undermine all of this wonderful dovish talk of theirs lately and the impact that that has had on reinflating some risk assets, some more than others. So, you know, you've got a couple scenarios under which the dollar could break out. Not all bad. I mean, obviously, if you had the trade talks totally implode, and that's still something the market doesn't care about, the market's willing to listen to any hopeful talk, even though we've had numerous times now that of promises that we were going to meet such and such by this deadline. Every single one of them has gone past so far. Maybe it will continue, maybe it won't. But if that breaks down or some other shoe drops, you know, and you have a risk-off trade, the dollar will break out higher, and that's going to cause problems for equities, especially in emerging markets. It's going to undermine the rally in commodities that we've had in some places more than others. But we could see the dollar strengthen again for some of the reasons that it did last year that aren't bad on the surface of things for the U.S. economy. But if we continue to see the U.S. markets outperform, the U.S. economy continues to outperform, earnings season that kicks off in just a few more days is less bad than has been expected, then, you know, you get a renewed impetus of money back into dollar assets. And that could cause the dollar to go up with stocks and everything else. And here again, yeah, that would probably be a less bad scenario for all of the markets and if the dollar goes up because of risk-off fears. But either way you look at it, and especially if you look at a long-term chart, every pullback you get is shallower, and it keeps bumping up after those pullbacks to that 97.5 level. And unless you get a downdraft of some significance for some reason, the break is probably still going to be higher, whether the Fed likes it or not.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And as you said, just looking at that chart, that's a very strong chart, and it does show some sort of another breakout to the upside, unless, of course, as you said, a more significant pullback. But we just haven't gotten one of those in quite a while now for the dollar. Chris, good chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time. And I really think that look at the energy stocks could be very opportunistic if oil does remain elevated and if the stocks finally start to play some sort of catch up. Chris, thanks for your time, and I'll be chatting with you again later this week.